is Democracy Now!. Feminist Bella Gayos returns home after almost a decade in exile. She talks about independence and the future of women in a free East Timor. Then, José Ramos Horta. He won the Nobel Peace Prize. He was traveling the world for close to a quarter of a century, pleading the cause of his people. Now he's home. And finally, in a world where the IMF, the World Bank, and the World Trade Organization write the rules, East Timorese try to create a sustainable economy. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman, broadcasting from East Timor. First, the headlines. A BBC investigation led by reporter Greg Pallast has revealed that the head of OPEC warned Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez of last month's attempted coup several days in advance. OPEC Secretary General Ali Rodriguez said OPEC learned that Libya and Iraq had planned to call for a new oil embargo against the U.S. because of its support for Israel. Rodriguez warned Chavez the U.S. would prod a long-simmering coup into action to break any embargo threat. The advance warning allowed Chavez to prepare an extraordinary plan which saved both his government and his life. A Chavez insider says several hundred pro-Chavez troops hid in secret corridors under the presidential palace. The chief of the paratroop division, loyal to Chavez, waited until coup leader Pedro Carmona was inside the palace. He then phoned Carmona and gave him 24 hours to return Chavez alive. President Bush said Monday he'll sign a nuclear arms treaty with Russian President Vladimir Putin next week. The accord's only real constraint is that each side must have no more than 2,200 warheads by the year 2012. But the treaty expires then, leaving each side free to have as many weapons as it likes unless the treaty is extended. The Pentagon itself called for reducing active warheads to 2,200 in its own classified strategy documents, and the treaty doesn't require either side to destroy a single missile launcher or warhead. It allows them to keep weapons in storage where they can be reactivated on relatively short notice. A European Union envoy said Monday a U.S. ally in Afghanistan is holding thousands of former Taliban fighters in conditions that resemble Auschwitz. Klaus-Peter Kleibers told the Agence France-Presse, quote, "The people in the prison at Shabargan in northern Afghanistan have nothing on their bones anymore. They are being treated like cattle." Shabargan is the main base of General Abdul Rashid Dostum, one of the most powerful and violent warlords in Afghanistan and an important U.S. ally. Meanwhile, U.S. Special Operations Forces killed five Afghans and captured 32 others in a night raid in southern Afghanistan on Sunday. Almost immediately, some officials raised doubts about the operation. They say initial questioning of the prisoners gave no immediate indications that the captives are Taliban or Al-Qaeda fighters. Some officials quickly drew parallels between Sunday's firefight and a raid in January, when U.S.-led special forces killed at least 16 people who were later determined to be neither Taliban nor Al-Qaeda fighters. 27 prisoners seized in that operation were released. Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat made his first trip in 5 months around the West Bank, but canceled a trip to the place seen by his fellow Palestinians as the most notorious killing fields of the Intifada, the Jenin refugee camp. Thousands of Palestinians and countless TV cameras were awaiting his arrival in the wasteland of wrecked homes when news came that Arafat had changed his mind. Arafat's aides say they were worried about heckling, but the concerns may have been deeper. Many Palestinians say Arafat's decision to allow 13 Palestinians from Bethlehem's Church of the Nativity to be exiled was a sellout. Arafat's stage was mysteriously burnt shortly before he began his journey. When the crowds realized he wasn't coming, a gunfight erupted. Meanwhile, Greece, Ireland, Spain, Italy, Portugal, and Belgium have offered sanctuary to the Palestinians freed from the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem. But European Union foreign ministers at their talks in Brussels said they are unable to resolve the vital legal questions about the treatment of the men. Former U.S. President Jimmy Carter toured Cuba's biomedical laboratories outside Havana yesterday. He said Bush administration officials who briefed him before his trip never mentioned any concerns about Cuban involvement in developing biological weapons. But just days after the briefings ended, the Bush administration charged that Cuba had developed biowarfare research and provided biotechnology to so-called rogue states. Carter's trip is the first post-revolutionary visit to Cuba by any current or former U.S. head of state. He hinted the State Department announcement was an attempt to undercut his visit. And finally, War Secretary Donald Rumsfeld on Monday urged the United States Congress to ease restrictions on military relations with Indonesia. He said Jakarta is dealing with past human rights violations in, quote, an orderly, democratic way.
I lost one sister and two brothers.
It was 10 days before I was to give birth. The army was shooting people, and they would die at our feet, but you couldn't stop to help them.
I know families that were totally wiped out.
East Timor, annihilation to a new nation. Tune in to Democracy Now! Beginning May 13th, broadcasting from East Timor.
Converged in two places.
Hundreds and hundreds of troops coming straight at the Timorese.
When they came, they opened fire on the people.
Well, we pride ourselves, and I think properly so, in standing up for human rights.
Military assistance programs expose the trainees to democratic ideas and humanitarian standards.
I'm very concerned about what's happened in East Timor. We have ignored it so far in ways that I think are unconscionable.
I was informed by Colonel Sugianto, he was a top officer in the Jakarta administration, that America had given the green light for Indonesia to invade Timor.
From East Timor, this is Democracy Now!
Welcome to Democracy Now!, breaking the sound barrier from Dili, East Timor. It's 6 days to East Timor's independence. Today, women from across the world said that an international tribunal is the only way to hold accountable those responsible for crimes against humanity committed in Timor during a quarter century of Indonesian occupation. More than 125 women's rights activists from 14 countries and 22 U.S. states signed the statement, which was released less than a week before East Timor's independence. On Monday, East Timorese Foreign Minister José Ramos Horta spoke to several reporters at a cultural event here in Dili, including Australian reporter Lindsay Murdoch, who was just banned from Indonesia for his reporting on Aceh and East Timor. I joined the group and spoke to Horta about the issue of Indonesian and international responsibility for crimes against humanity committed in Timor.
Yes, Amy.
With the latest information coming out of the Sydney Morning Herald about the leaks, about the eavesdropping on of the Australian government on the Indonesian military helping to plan the destruction of the militias in 1999, what do you have to say to the Australian government right now? And in what way should the Indonesian government and the Australian government be held accountable? Then I'll ask you about President Clinton.
Well, I'm not au courant with the eavesdropping and what information they actually got.
From the defense satellite director.
Yeah, I heard about that, but I don't know the details. I haven't read details of his dropping. It was obvious that Australia and the others knew all along what was going on. But I heard about it and read the leak. Not surprising, no? No. They've been eavesdropping since 75.
Should they provide that information, do you think, to the UN or to the Indonesian courts?
I presume so. The Australian side should seek to cooperate, support the Indonesian prosecutors and the tribunal in the current ongoing trials, because, as you know, Adam Damiri was quoted today as blaming the UN, CIFPOL, for all the violence. So maybe Australia should make available this information, you know, in fairness to the UN, because the UN has been accused, UNAMET has been accused, CIFPOL, so...
Do you think these governments that worked with the Indonesian government should also be held accountable, Australia and the United States? They share intelligence information all the time, especially from these satellites.
Well, on the eve of independence of East Timor, with many world leaders coming from former President Bill Clinton to John Howard and many others, I prefer to focus on their presence here, which is a message of support to East Timor, rather than comment on past, though tragic they may be, events.
What do you think of the U.S. pulling out of the International War Crimes Tribunal, the International Criminal Court?
It is their sovereign decision. Timor, East Timor will accede to the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court. We make a conscious decision in the belief that this kind of international instruments, if fully ratified by the international community, will serve as deterrence against future war crimes and crimes against humanity, which in turn would make the world more peaceful and free for all of us. So other countries, whether they accede or not, it's their sovereign right to do so. I will not comment or criticize them one way or another.
Do you think there should be an international war crimes tribunal in the case of East Timor?
I prefer to wait the outcome of the war crimes, the ad hoc tribunals in Indonesia. They're still going on, in spite of the skepticism voiced by many quarters. They're going on, and we said all along that if Indonesia delivered justice, and is seen to be delivering justice, then there would be no need for a war crimes tribunal. So we'll wait and see at the conclusion of this process of trial in Jakarta.
Do you expect a treaty with Australia on the Timor Sea this week?
I'm confident. I haven't taken part in the talks with the Australian side, but I was briefed today by the Chief Minister, who just flew into Canberra and out. He was quite positive. He believed that not the treaty as such, but because Australia, through its own domestic laws, need to ratify it, and we also then would agree with Australia as to the timing of the ratification of the treaty. What we will be doing is probably exchange of letters that prolong, extend the life of the current system, the current arrangement.
How many world leaders are coming?
Altogether, I think we have 80 delegations.
80 delegations.
From heads of state, prime ministers, foreign ministers, envoys and ambassadors. These are official ones, plus many hundreds of friends and senior and personalities who are not necessarily in government.
How many heads of state?
Head of state, I cannot... I would say altogether between, I think, about 15. We consider head of state and head of government the same status. Like in the case of Australia, the Prime Minister is essentially the head of state. So all this together would be about 15.
Any surprises? We know Clinton.
He's not a head of state.
Oh, no. Yeah. Personality?
No, no surprise. ASEAN, almost all ASEAN countries are represented either by a deputy prime minister, foreign minister, or defense minister.
Except for?
So far, we haven't heard information from Burma whether Myanmar is represented or not.
Might Aung San Suu Kyi come?
Well, I would love it if she were able to come. She knows how much we like her, we respect her, and we are all just very delighted that she has been released. And we hope that the dialogue towards true peace and democracy in Burma will continue.
Is accommodation for all these VIPs?
Yes, I think we have no problems with accommodation, not, you know, to the standards that the VIPs deserve and are used to, but I think most people understand our precarious hotel situation.
Is there another cruise ship coming?
One hotel boat from Thailand called the Dolphin, yeah.
But the Central is going. The Maritime Center?
No, Maritime is staying. It's Amos that is going or is gone, and we are very pleased that they are gone with unpaid tax bills. But that's a matter for the company and the UN to sort out. Unpaid to the East Timor side, but a responsibility of the UN.
I did a runner.
How the UN enter into a contract with a boat, which charge huge amount of money, and then without paying any tax to the country. That's, I think, it's the UN that has to explain this gimmick. And I'm sure Amy, as usual, will go and chase the story.
Get the taxes paid for you. I'm sorry, I came in late to the conversation. Did you say Megawati would be coming?
I'm confident she will come. We haven't heard an official word, but I have had 2 days of conversations with her advanced teams, and they're all very positive about conditions here, the security protocol arrangements we are making. They are cooperating with us on all of this, and I think they going back with a very strong positive feeling about her reception and outcome of the visit here.
If she doesn't come, what sort of message would that send?
Well, that's a hypothetical question. I know I'm confident she will come and will send a great positive message of reconciliation between East Timor and Indonesia. And it would show how a stateswoman she is. And if she, by some reason, unforeseen circumstances, she does not come, it does not affect the way we look at her with the same respect and with the same determination to normalize relations with Indonesia.
The U.S. is talking about, the Bush administration is talking about restoring military ties with Indonesia. They were cut off after the 1999 Indonesian military destruction of Timor. What do you think about that?
My only comment on that is, as an impending sovereign nation and government, we cannot comment on matters that are of domestic exclusive sovereign right between two countries. Imagine, you know, East Timor would have to comment on every time, you know, one country establish ties with another. You know, East Timor is free, sovereign nation, and this is now a matter for the U.S. and Indonesia.
Do you feel that the Indonesian military has changed enough for the U.S. to restore ties when looking at a population in Indonesia that maybe has to deal with the military like the East Timorese did?
The Indonesian side has made very strong public statements in regard to the situation in Aceh and Irian, offering wide-range autonomy. I believe that if these arrangements are fully implemented on the ground, they'll be very far-reaching. Now the question is, will they be implemented? It's a question for the Indonesians to answer.
Yeah, I have to go.
Mr. Ramaswamy, one last question. Your mother said, court first, reconciliation second. What are the thoughts of her son?
Well, neither Shanana nor myself, we ever said that we should promote reconciliation at the expense of justice. There cannot be true peace if the victims remain victims forever, when their voices, their suffering are not heard. The question is, what kind of justice, when, how, where? That is when there has been a debate for us, for myself. We have two levels of justice, you know, or two institutions. One, the ad hoc tribunals taking place in Indonesia. We have to wait for the outcome. The other, we have a serious crimes court, serious crimes panel that has been doing a magnificent job with less resources than the UN War Crimes Tribunal on ex-Yugoslavia have produced many more indictments and verdicts ranging from 10 to 30 years prison sentence to some militia leaders. And this process will continue. But for those who committed lesser crimes that do not amount to war crimes, genocide and so on, we have the truth and reconciliation where people should step forward, confess to their crimes, ask for forgiveness, and then in dialogue, negotiations with the local community, with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, the local leaders, they reach an agreement where the guilty ones perform some civic duties and then are set free.
José Ramos Horta speaking in Dili, East Timor. We'll be back with the East Timorese foreign minister in a minute.
There is no silence deep enough.
There is no silence deep enough.
No corruption thick enough.
No corruption thick enough.
No politician bent enough.
No politician bent enough.
To bury your story, to keep it from us.
To bury your story and keep it from us.
Love from a short distance.
Love from a short distance.
Broadcasting from East Timor. I'm Amy Goodman. We return to a conversation I had with East Timorese Foreign Minister José Ramos Horta in Dili on Monday.
So how do you feel on the eve of independence?
Great. Although also apprehensive, you know, because the task is enormous. The challenges are enormous. We have to handle so many issues at the same time. Setting up the government, consolidating institutions, negotiate with Australia, with Indonesia. We will soon open up the maritime boundary discussions with Indonesia, with Australia, looking at the domestic challenges to keep the peace, create jobs.
All the groups that helped in different places around the world, what do you see as the role of solidarity with East Timor now? Do you see they have a place? Where do you think they can be the most effective?
Well, first, let me say that from the very beginning in my discussions planning for the independence celebrations, I have stated that I have this raised it in the Council of Ministers, and everybody unanimously agree that we should have a brainstorming discussion with the Solidarity Movement. Obviously, Solidarity Movement will not be, working for the government as in the past. It was, you know, very intimately working with the resistance. Now we are going to be in different role, but the solidarity movement will have an important role in helping this country continue to mobilize resources, working with everybody, with NGOs, with the government whenever necessary, and trying to help us being a debt-free nation, so that at least there is one country in the world that is not saddled by debt, and that's our determination. Whether we succeed or not will depend on our national policies and the international support.
There are meetings of the World Bank tomorrow here, the donor countries.
Yes.
In what way will you work to try to maintain that debt freeness when the World Bank and the IMF seem to go in the very opposite direction?
Well, they have accepted, they have agreed, and fair to say, they never put pressure on us that we have to borrow. Only they said that if you cannot raise the money you need from the donors to fill the budget gap, what will you do? We probably would have to borrow, but fortunately, with the help of the World Bank, fair to say, they lobbied for us. We managed to secure, on the eve of the donors' meeting, secure all the funding necessary for our budget needs and for development assistance. The donor community has been outstanding, and this is the first donor meeting where, before it starts, we have already secured all the money needed.
How much?
About $70 million for the budget support, for the budget. We have a budget gap, I think, of $30 million for the next 3 years, plus development assistance.
Mm-hmm. With countries like the U.S., do you see this money as reparations?
No, I don't see it as reparations. I don't see Japanese support as a reparation, or Portuguese support as a reparation. For us, past is past. We have to have the heart and the courage to put the past where it belongs. It might be painful for many of us, for me also personally, who lost family members, but we have to think of the greater good of the country and acknowledge the tremendous effort many of these countries that in the past might not have been terribly friendly to East Timor, but they have made tremendous efforts to help. And it would be very anti-Timorese, un-Christian, you know, if a country like Japan that is helping us, or a country like Australia is helping us, and we keep talking about their wrongs in the past. I don't talk about the wrongs of individuals in the past. It would be unkind, un-Christian on my side, on my part.
So how will countries be dissuaded from doing the kinds of things that were done to the East Timorese, like the U.S. military, the U.S. government supporting the Indonesian military in the genocide?
Well, they just have to look themselves at the mirror, ask themselves whether what they are doing is wrong or right. I try often to look myself in the mirror and ask what I'm doing is wrong or right.
José Ramos Horta, East Timor's foreign minister. He returned to his island nation after a quarter a century in exile. About the same time, a younger generation was trickling home as well. It was just after the Indonesian military was forced out after the independence referendum of 1999. Bella Gayos was one of those young people. She spent nearly a decade in exile in Canada after Indonesia had given her a student scholarship to act as a poster girl for the occupation. Once there, she defected. She returned to East Timor with Canadian peacekeepers in December of 1999 to help rebuild the country Indonesia had just destroyed. In addition to her activism, Bella has turned to music to reflect upon East Timor's struggle and the challenges that lie ahead.
Well, my song is about, I'm talking about my experience, but actually my experience representing many people's experience. I was talking about my time when I was traveling all over the world, calling out for support from everybody, everyone, every government I've met. And I just, you know, thinking about those days, those years that passed. And I think it was so important for everyone to think about it, how we struggle so hard. And now that we have achieved our struggle, we should thinking about those hard days, hard years, and uphold what we have got so far. And also I make an appeal to the governments of East Timor to indeed become a voice for the people of East Timor, and not to, you know, become kind of like hunger of power and struggling with each other, simple for power that later on could be end up in war and other arguments or other things that are not so important for the people of East Timor. And I also appeal to the people of East Timor to be united, something so important to all of us. We don't want to end up like other countries that have showed example, war, carry on fighting, carry on arguments, things like that that I explain it through my songs. So I guess this is my, I can sing it to you, and too bad it's in my language, but I think people can understand it through the lyrics that I have put out.
Barak mate la con notero, oritane liberdari. Ohiloron etan naroman, mundu tomak lo que matan, no hametin liberdari. Ulong sira sai mata dalang, orilori povu ba oin. Ulung sira sai mata dalam orisa sing povunia lia. Tinambara kita fae malu halau funu bali berdari, liberdari bae matomang, liberdari ba povutimo. Barak mate la con noterus, oritane liberdari. Ohilorong etan naroman, mundu tomak lo que matan, no hametin liberdari. Ulung sira sai mata dalang, odilori povu baoin. Ulung sira sai mata dalang, orisa sing pobunya liang. Aula orai barai, ori hakila ronia narang. Aula orai barai, ori foti onia narang.
Belagayos. Singing in Tetu, and the song is called
Liberdade.
And can you just translate the words exactly?
Okay. The song I call Liberdade. First time I said I was travel from countries to countries, uphold your name, call out for your name. And we have been separated for many, many years, simple fighting for liberation. And also, through that fighting struggle, many of us have died, suffered, and lost many things. And now that we have received the light of freedom, where everybody, every country have stand up and supporting us. And I also appeal to the government of East Timor to indeed become the voice of the voiceless people of East Timor, and also to lead the people of East Timor and show a good example to the people of East Timor. That was the meaning of the song in English.
And where have you performed this?
We're supposed to perform for, you know, they, we have 1 month of a celebration, independent East Timor celebration, but we failed to perform today, but we are going to perform on the 16th and 17th of May before May 20th.
The big day.
So it's going to be a big day, the day that everybody's waiting for.
So how do you feel about independence? I mean, Bella, you have been speaking out for this, organizing for this, fighting for this for quite a long time. First of all, how old are you?
Well, I'm 29 right now, and my feeling is actually I'm very happy that finally the struggle that we, many of us, I think we all believe at many years that that's a lost cause. But the whole thing is turned a different way. Many people, I guess, through the struggle of people of East Timor have shown the courage, the determination that the people of East Timor have shown many years and have encouraged many countries to finally realize and recognize the rights of the people of East Timor.
You've been on Democracy Now! Before, but you were in our studio. And now I guess I'm in yours because I'm here at your house in Dili, East Timor. You're singing a song with a keyboard and a accompanying a guitarist. And you also are doing UN radio these days. So you yourself are a journalist.
Yes, I am, actually. I've been working on this for over 8 months now, and I'm a program producer. I am responsible for youth programs and women's issue, women's program, every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and as well as Wednesday night for women's issue. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Women's issues in Timor. Mm-hmm. What about how far women have come, and how has it been for you, returning as a woman who is in exile? For how long were you living in Canada and traveling in the United States?
Well, I've been in exile for over 9 years, and coming back here in East Timor, as for women's issue, I must admit that I'm not really active as I was in Canada or in many other countries. I guess I'm in a situation like many other women who come from other country, exile in another country. We have difficulties in involving ourselves in the situation, in the groups of women's group here in East Timor. I guess we have to take some time to really understand what the issue are, the people want, how they want to carry out the issue, and what kind of programs that women of East Timor wanted. And we don't want to be accused of being westernized and bringing Canadian idealistic or American ideals to East Timor. So we have to just, we're not just sitting around, but we're watching and see if there is any possibility. We always give our hand and support them.
So there's two things. One is being accepted by the women here, and there's another being accepted by the men. There were a lot of men who were in exile, and they come back as leaders of this country. Mm-hmm. What about you returning? How are you accepted into the politics of East Timor and those who are governing?
Mm-hmm. Well, I am. First of all, I'm not really keen in involving myself with the government, but I do care to see what kind of program that got the government to carry out for the people of East Timor. And I wanted to say it's a lot of power struggles going on in the governments. People are fighting each other. The unity that we have been speaking for many, many years, it's less and less the meaning here in East Timor. And I do hope, but I'm still optimistic that the things will change, and particularly that May 20th, we're going to be a new country, That's very important for us to work on, and we have to stick on all the words that we have screaming out for many, many years to different countries, different people.
Bella Gayos, speaking at her home in Dili, East Timor. We'll continue with her in just a minute.
Crowds gather round, kneeling at the feet of common thieves. Hungry for the word, but God would never speak to such as these, such as these, who are for healing hands. lovers holding hands in the circle of the sinners and the slave. Memories that linger from the cradle, placing parcels in the grave. In the grave.
You're listening to Democracy Now!, broadcasting from East Timor in our special series, East Timor, From Annihilation to a New Nation. We return to Bella Gayos, sitting at her home in Dili. She returned a year and a half ago after nearly a decade in exile.
Bella, you went to Canada what year?
In late 1993.
And you actually went as a kind of ambassador for the Indonesian government, a student ambassador.
Exactly. Yeah, I was involved with a program called Canada World Youth Exchange, and I was supposed to be representing Indonesia because at the time East Timor was called as 27 province of Indonesia. And everybody knows the story. I was escaped. I defected when I got to Canada because my duty was supposed to go to Canada, learn about the education system, the culture, the lifestyle of the people of Canada, but end up the government put me up as a spokesperson for their propaganda, which I have to declare to the people of Canada that East Timor was part of Indonesia and everyone of East Timor wanted to be part of Indonesia. Integration is what the people of East Timor desire for.
And integration, for listeners who aren't familiar with that term, was what the Indonesians called Timor being a part of Indonesia, as opposed to calling it the Indonesian occupation. So when you got to Canada, what exactly did you do? What do you mean you defected?
Well, I defected. I was arrived 3 days later with the help of one of my uncle in the United States. I think everybody knows Constanze Pinto. And I was escaped from the hotel where I stayed, and then joined the group called ETAN, East Timor Alert Network in Canada. And then since then, I just never come back until late December 8, 1999, right after the whole destruction took place.
Mm-hmm. And what did you find when you came back? What did your country look like? What did East Timor look like?
It was very hard, you know. I've seen a lot in TV, reading newspapers about the situation in East Timor, but I didn't really see the exact pictures when I arrived. That was very hard, the destructions all over the places, houses burning, and nothing on the road, people just walking around, only a few people. I didn't see much of movement here. But I was shocked after 3 months, you know, things changed very fast. People started to involve in activities. The development process took place, and they still carry on until today. Mm-hmm. But it was very hard for the first time I arrived here in this country.
Just down the block from you are burned out houses like every other one.
Mm-hmm. Almost everywhere. And when I got to airport, Dili was absolutely dried. You know, when I couldn't even stand waiting until, you know, the pilot always said, don't stand up to see, you know. And when the flight always let go down, all the passengers asked to sit down, but I couldn't. I want to stand up to see what my country looks like at the time. So I stood up to see outside from the window. Everything was destroyed. You know, from up, you can see almost everything, particularly Dili. So when I got out from the airplane, got in a car, or was in a burned car, you don't see much of a taxi or any transportation exists in Dili. So I traveled all the way from the airport to my house in Bidau Santana. I can see almost the whole city, almost nothing. The whole buildings, everything was burned. Yeah.
Was your mother here during the burning of the city?
Yeah, my whole family is here. But there's also my family is also forced to leave the country right after when the destruction took place on the 7th of December, if I still remember the day.
You mean in 1999 or 1975?
In 1999.
September.
When everybody was, you know, forcibly mm-hmm. moved to Kupang and West Timor. Mm-hmm. Yeah, many people are forced to go. Many people just, you know, afraid and just go. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my family's part of that.
So you came back and you work with the United Nations?
Yes, first time I arrived, I was working with CIFPOL, the civilian police, UNTA, UN civilian police, and I helped establish the first East Timor Academy here in this country. And I was traveling to 13 districts to promote the programs of the policing here in East Timor. I was very happy that I was able to reach my goal, which is involve women to become police women in this country. And I got more than 30% of women involved in the policing here in East Timor.
Your cousin's a policewoman?
Yes, my cousin and even my many cousins, including my sister-in-law, soon will become a police officer.
So how do you avoid issues like police brutality? How are people trained to deal here now? In the past it was just the Indonesian military killing the people, and now the East Timorese must keep the peace here among their own people.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that very interested to see the what happened in the academy was that in the academy, the cadets, the new police, they have been teaching human rights course, violence, course that related to refugee event, domestic violence, sexual violence, and more so there is a lot of issue on ethics, moral, and I emphasize the word human rights course that we have been, they have been taught. And one big problem that I also see taking place, there are not just one police instructor, they call it, from one country, but from different countries, and everybody have their own way of doing things. Sometimes I can see that the cadet, the East Timor police, are confused what exactly the policy that they should follow or what example they should follow. Like, for example, police from US have different way of dealing with things, dealing with human beings, dealing with problems. Meanwhile, those from Africa is different, from Asian, different, Australian. But there are a group of civilian police, UN civilian police, that want to show that they're the best, like US example, or from British, and as well as from Australia, and the worst one from Portugal.
Mm-hmm. So police from all over the world have come here under the UN administration, which is going to turn over to East Timor on May 20th.
Yes. I think by the time there will be 1,800 police officer, East Timor police officer in this country. Mm-hmm.
What about the issue of violence, domestic violence, sexual violence that you talk about? How rampant is it here?
Every day you can check it at the CIFPOL record if they want to admit it. But, of course, UN civilian, they want to cover up a lot of things to look good that they have succeeded here in this country. But there are a lot of people who are talking about complaints about their they're not effective in doing their job. Domestic violence is a big issue here in this country because so many people still don't have jobs, a lot of unemployment. The unemployment is very high in this country, and many women have, the situation changed, women have involved more in the development process, working and doing things outside, beside home, like they used to. So that's a cost problem. I guess people just not used to that situation, and the culture are not really helping women to empower themselves. In the church, all this still very strong. That's why it's caused a lot of suffering for women. And I also still remember the person who was responsible for promotion of equality, Mika Tos. He's also bringing this issue many, many times to ask the government to increase the amount of percentage of domestic violence in this country.
Are there any, like, rape clinics or shelters for women who are victims of domestic violence, survivors of it?
There is none. None one of this kind of institution been said. One is actually ETWAVE, East Timor Women's Against Violence and for Child. They have opened, they call it a safe house. But the name, we heard about it, but I haven't seen the women have a safe place to go to. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You live right by the Santa Cruz Cemetery here. Mm-hmm. When I was coming over to your house, we were passing it. I couldn't quite go in front of it, but I walked along the side. And in fact, just down the road, there's some graffiti scrawled on one of the walls that just says 12 November 1991, Santa Cruz. Mm-hmm. Your brother was in the massacre?
Actually, myself as well. My brother and I, both of us, were involved at the massacre. But thanks God, we didn't get killed.
You were there on that day?
Yes, I was there. Yeah, I was there. Yeah, my brother, he was arrested, but I was able to escape from the cemetery.
Yeah. By running?
Yes, I was running from the wall from the back, which I believe you know it very well. Hidden for 3 days and then went home.
And I think why I got confused was hearing the story of your brother after, when you went to find him.
Yes.
What happened to him?
He was arrested simply because he was one that helping organize, produce a T-shirt, Free East Timor T-shirt. And I guess some of the friends of him that couldn't handle the suffer that the military arrested some of them and electric shocked them, beat them up, and so they couldn't handle the suffer. The friends were speaking out his name, so he was arrested for that too, and his involvement in the Santa Cruz Cemetery. So he was put in prison for about almost 6 months, and all fingernails pulled out at the time.
All of his fingernails?
Yeah, pulled out, and also his body was burnt with cigarette. Yeah.
And you found him finally?
Yeah, we found him, actually, with the help of Bishop Bello. Yeah.
Where is he today, your
he's
brother?
He's still around. We're still around, and he's okay. You know, fingernails coming back, everything. And then he's okay with the situation. He accepted, and now he's very happy with the, you know, the struggle that we finally, we achieve everything that we're fighting for.
You've traveled all over now after you left East Timor, speaking out for East Timor. What about pro-democracy Indonesian activists? Have you had any dealings with them?
You know, this house is like, I can tell this house is like an activist house, and still, you know, the word activist is not just word, but this is me. My house is open to a lot of Indonesian friends. Most of them coming visit my house, and we're still talking about it. And even we're thinking of making a story together about the political situation in East Timor and the one in Indonesia. And I was very shocked that, our leader, I must say it, José Ramos Horta, was when he was changed his mind or something happened. He always do that. He's not consistent with what he said in the past. He's not keeping his word that he was saying that, you know, Indonesia. I still remember what he said. Indonesia would not be achieved their democracy if they not release East Timor, release Aceh, and release West Papua. But now he say different things. So I guess this is a good question to ask him why he said that and why he changed.
Yeah. Other places in Indonesia where people are struggling for independence and against the repression of the military.
Yeah, indeed. I'm aware about this and because of most of my friends. And I've seen them, some of them are working here, even here in East Timor, to help us and still inform myself about a lot of things. And, you know, it's too bad that we don't really working together to do whatever we can to support them, but I'm hoping that after independence in East Timor, we know exactly things here in East Timor, realize whatever we want, and we also should give our hand to other people, particularly Indonesia, to realize their struggle. Yeah.
Bella Gaius, what are your plans after May 20th? You're a UN radio reporter now, presenter, producer of youth programs, and you also do the news. The UN leaves, right? Does that mean you won't have a job?
Well, I'm going to finish my contract with the UN end of May. But, you know, as for job, it's always there. Job is always there. Only, you know, when you're talking about salary, I'm not really sure. But when you're talking about job, there's a lot of things I am involved. And right now, I'm so keen in realize my band, WEM East Timor group band, which is I'm going to focus most of my time. I want to realize this band by promoting tolerance, democracy, environment, human rights through songs. And I like to involve more in education. I wanted to see if these people, I can help them through whatever I can, by singing them songs, teaching them through word that I putting in my paper.
What's the name of your band?
Bella Gaius, East Timorese activist and feminist. I spoke to her at her home in Dili, just a block down the road from the Santa Cruz Cemetery, where Indonesian soldiers gunned down more than 270 Timorese in 1991. Belagayo survived that attack. 12 years later, new students are preparing for a new Timor. I spoke to a small group of them on the campus of the University of East Timor.
Pardon?
Was the military at the campus at the university?
Yeah, I believe, yeah, because I don't know exactly. I'm just starting last 2 years, so probably there was military around the university in order to catch or to arrest the students who was struggling against them.
What about the new East Timor? How will your life be different, Nasser?
I don't know. Let's see in the future. Because I can't say that East Timor is going to be a good country or a developed country, but everything needs a process. So we'll see in the future.
What do you expect? What do you want to see happen with your country?
I would like to see East Timor, especially the people, the poor people, in a good life. Everything is in a good... As East Timor is now... the leaders say that East Timor is a democracy country, so we hope that democracy is not only in theory, but it will be practiced.
And what does that mean? What do you think of the president? Did you vote in this election for Xanana Gusmão?
Yep, I did. I was vote for Xanana because I know, I believe that he could guide East Timorese, especially to develop this country and to make some equity with other countries that is just starting to develop themselves.
To look at how other countries are also doing that.
Yeah.
What would you like to do after you leave school?
After I leave school, actually I'm taking English department as a teaching trainer, teacher training faculty, but I was really interested on how to look forward to make a good relationship with other countries in order to ask for their resources, their professionals, personal, in order to help East Timor.
That does it for today's program. You can go to our website for contacts at www.democracynow.org. That's democracynow.org. You can email us at mail@democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Chris Abrams, Miranda Kennedy, and Lizzie Ratner in New York, music maestro and engineer Anthony Sloan, in East Timor, Brad Simpson, Rick Rowley. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening.
Sorry, why Timor Sudan?